Wow. So I'm Elizabeth, and I remember sitting right there and hearing somebody speak and going, I'm going to do that. Someday that's going to be me. And for as much as I wanted to believe it at the time, I could not see it, and I did not believe it. So how fucking cool is this? I have this little thing that Chris gave me because I'm a babbler. Let's see if I can stick with it. All right. Good luck, everybody. All right. So here's the deal. I'm supposed to talk about my family life and when I was born. And we're not going to talk very long about that. I had a very nightmare of a childhood, and it's I'll tell you, I started on drugs the first time I can remember when I was about 3, and I remember. And so I don't even know what happened before that. And as you can imagine, I was born to addicts, you know, very sick people. And so I don't know what that was all about. I was not the little girl that got to talk to people. That's kind of hard to believe because I babble all the fucking time. But I was not allowed to talk to people. I can remember my brothers, we walked through this really big trail through the woods to go to school, and I just remember being in the back by myself, and all those kids were up front, and thinking, part of my brain was thinking that I wanted to be with them, I wanted to walk with them, but then the other part of my brain, I can remember, I hadn't thought about this in a long time until this fucking piece of paper right here, but anyway, thanks, Chris. The other part of my brain didn't know that it was not normal, right? I had no clue. I just thought that was my life. This is the way it was. And, you know, I don't want to stay too long on that, but I wanted to touch on that because I wanted to say that, you know, if that begins your life, then you know, that's going to map out how you deal with everything for the rest of your life until you get to a place like this. And so what did I learn? I learned that love means I'm going to hurt you and then I'm going to leave you. I learned that you weren't supposed to speak about anything, you know. I learned that I better leave you before you leave me if I cared about you, you know. I better fuck it up before you leave me, things like that. So I spent, I don't know really what happened except my mom had, you know, I had stepfathers all the time. I do remember coming home when I was about 10 years old from this house by my apartments where there was this Mexican family and they had this daughter that was like 17. And that was the first time I can remember being sexually abused by a woman, and did not know at the time that my mother was prepping me. She was sending me there. She was prepping me to have to agree to let those people take me, to adopt me. And I didn't know this. I was having a grand time. The girl gave me jewelry. I didn't fucking know, you know. It starts young, doesn't it? Which is not funny, but fuck if I can't laugh at it, who the fuck can? You know, what are you going to do? So this one day, I remember we went out. It was a very weird day. And I can remember as a young child all the way up until now, and addicts have this, and we don't know it, but, you know, keep it in mind. We're some of the most intelligent, some of the most alert, aware people. You know, I guess trauma makes us that way, or I don't know what does it, but I can remember it being weird, like the feeling a full moon gives you, you know what I mean? Like, you just know, it's weird shit. Can't really put your finger on it, right? And so I can remember that being a very weird day, and they took me, this family took me out. They were really just pouring it on thick that day, you know? And not the jewelry, by the way. Just, you know, taking me to eat, and they took me out to this place on Ben White, which I later found out was a fucking farm where kids worked. And they showed me this, like, there was this, like, it was out on Burleson Road, and there were horses, and there was, like, this building that's, like, an L-shaped, and there were just doors. And they were telling me, you know, I was fighting them all the way at this point because something was weird, you know. And they were telling me that if I were to live there, that I would have my own room, and that it would just be me in that room, and I could play with the horses and whatever, you know, which at the time, I don't fucking know. I didn't know they were interviewing me. But so I got home that day, and no one was there. I was 10, remember that? I was 10, and I got home to our apartment, and there was nobody there. And I think I might have fought those people. I wasn't supposed to go home or some shit. I don't know, but I got away from them, and I went home. And nobody was there, and so I sat there for a while, and I watched TV, and I was like, where's my fucking mother? So I went back, and I looked in her room, and there wasn't anything there. Like, all of her pretties off her dresser were gone. You know, her perfume and the brush and all that. And her clothes were still there, but, like, because I couldn't tell if any were missing. But I knew her pretties were gone, which was very weird. Does anybody even know what the fuck I'm saying? Their pretties? Okay, good. Sometimes I say some shit and ain't nobody understands. It's true. So I noticed that, and I'm like, yeah, fuck it. I'm going to go eat Kool-Aid and fucking salt like I'm not allowed to. So I go do that. I go do that, and I end up watching TV for a long time, and then it's dark, and I snap out, and I'm like, wait a minute, this is fucked up. What the fuck? So I call my grandparents, and it's, like, pretty late at night, and they come and get me. And come to find out, my mom had left. She left, and so my grandparents came to get me. I didn't find out till later that, it, like, for the next 2 years, I didn't hear from her. I didn't see her, no phone calls, no letters, nothing. And thankfully, they went and got my brother from my stepfather's house, and he was at my papa and nanny's with me, which, God, man, I'm going to say, if it wasn't for my big brother, I don't know. I don't know what I would have done. Because, you know, I skipped this part, but when we were really little, my stepfather, the one that gave me the drugs, and just a nightmare of a guy, they used to take us out. I have no idea why. I cannot remember, and it's okay, because sometimes it's good. You don't dig. Whatever's going to come up is going to come up, you know. And they take us out I-35, which there was nothing out there, and they would tell one of us that there was a quarter on the ground, my stepfather would, and we would get out and he would leave. And if it wasn't for my big brothers, I mean, I don't know what the fuck I would have done. You know, I'm talking about between 3 and 5 years old, you know, and they would get us back. And I don't remember a lot of that, but I know that no matter what, they were always there and making me laugh. So that was awesome. But anyway, so, okay, so we'll get out of that, and I try not to wear very much makeup because, fuck me, I'm a crier, you know? Okay, so, she'd left, we went to my grandparents, and you would think that was great, because my grandparents were great, you know? They took care of us, they gave us everything we ever wanted, you know? And, but I was terrible to him, you know, like I really was. Imagine that has something to do with, like I said earlier, you know, the way I had learned to do things. And after 2 years, my mom, you know, I was like 12, and my mom decided, you know, she came back out of nowhere and decided she wanted us back. And this time, she had found a meth cook. Yay! I didn't know it was yay until later, but anyway, whatever. So we would go to visit her at this apartment, and you know, until we went to stay with her. And man, I would always wake up, and people would be messing with me. You know, guys in the living room. It was never ever safe. And I started drawing Queen Elizabeth, like, because my name's fucking Elizabeth. I don't know. I like the pretty dresses and shit, and I got beat for that because he thought, her, you know, my stepfather thought that I was saying I thought I was a queen, and he didn't like that. So that got shut down pretty quick. And somehow we finally got, we moved in with him. I guess I was in seventh grade. Yeah, I was in seventh grade. No, sixth, right? I don't fucking know. My brain is gone, y'all. I was trying to do the dates, and there's like more question marks than there are years. I don't know. I even tried to call people. They're like, fuck, I don't know. We don't know. So, anywho's, so I was in sixth grade. I remember this because the lady at the corner of where we lived used to turn the sprinklers on every time it was gym day. That's all I remember about that part. And I remember us not being able to, we lived on Shoal Creek, and we were not able to get up if my parents weren't up. You know, you were not allowed to come out of your room until they got up. And so, literally, we would get in a lot of trouble. Shit, my brother used to get the shit beat out of him for leaving his shoes in the house. It was a fucking whack house, really. And so I started nesting then, right? That started when they would put me in the closet and go out of town when I was like five. But I started nesting like really heavy this time. Like I would take, I took the fucking drawer thing off my dresser and I would put a towel over it and I would stash fucking sandwiches and like pencils and toys and whatever the fuck I needed from out of the living room so that I'd have shit to do when we were stuck, because sometimes they didn't get up till like 3:30 in the afternoon or 5 or whatever, but we could not come out of our rooms till then, so that was that. So anywho, that was the beginning of that guy. We can skip on. I guess during 7th and 8th grade, I started snorting, what do you call those, no-dos or some shit. I was hardcore, right? And I, that just makes me sound like, what? Like, I don't even understand. But anyway, that's what we did. And started smoking pot. And then when I was about 14, I guess, I think I left there, like I, every time I got in trouble, my mom would send me to my grandparents anyway, and I started thinking, wow, this is a good deal. I'd rather go back there. So, and I'm skipping a lot because literally it seems like 5 million lifetimes in like a 2-month period, and we ain't got time for all that. So we'll skip to when I started doing dope on my own. I mean, I made the choice, like, or I guess I did. I don't really know. I had learned in sixth grade that, like, there was a smell. My stepfather always made his office right next to my bedroom. Creepy. Anyway, and I started smelling. I was like, oh, that smells good. What the fuck is that? And then I realized he had pot plants growing in the closet, like, right on the other side of my wall. So I knew that about him. So when they moved to this place out at the lake, you know, okay, went out there to live, and I would go, I remember, you know, your stereo, like, I'm fucking old, so y'all gotta, let me remind you, they used to be dial stereos, and cordless phones would pick up anything around you, and so they would pick up your stereo. I'm glad we don't have that these days, because tweakers would be like, over the fucking top, right? Wow. Tinfoil hats and shit, like wrap your phone in tinfoil, I don't know. So I'm scrolling through the fucking, now at this point I'm drinking all the fucking time, like all the time. We had cases of liquor, I lived at the lake, that's all we did, is party like a bitch. As a matter of fact, oh, we'll get to that. All right, so here's a, got ahead of myself, that never happens. Okay, so I am scrolling through my stereo one night, and I hear a telephone call, and I'm like, huh. So I hear it, and it's some weird shit, you know? Like, I don't understand it, because it's about something, the language I did not understand, and I don't mean English. I mean, like, the lingo or whatever they were talking about. I didn't understand, but I understood that it sounded pretty fucking cool. So I need to find out what was going on out there, so I started making excuses to go out to the living room at night, because I would always hear people. And so finally I made it all the way out the living room, and in my living room were, like, uniformed police officers and fucking guys with long beards and, you know, just like all these fucking people sitting around. And I started noticing, you know, I'd make it out there every now and then. And I was super fucking cute at 14. And so they were like, well, you know what? We could let her stay. And so my stepfather finally was like, hey, let her sit down. And he said, have you ever done this? And there was a big pile. And I said, yep, I sure have. And so that's the first time I ever did that. And don't do it. So that was it. So there you go. And that's when I first started on my own. I'm pretty sure we burnt out all the kids of our classes at Lake Travis. Like, most of them don't even do it anymore. They're like, oh, God, no. Because, you know, our parents had a lab in the basement of our house, which we finally noticed after a while. So that was a fucking shit show. And I finally got kicked out, got my own apartment. Off to the races. Now, let's get to, you know, we'll get to the part where I'm in my 20s, because literally you can just figure out what happened between 14 and 20, right? I just fucking partied all the time, went around house to house to house to house, because I didn't ever feel like I belonged anywhere, didn't feel like I fit in anywhere. And I always thought that, you know, like, I just, that wasn't for me. I mean, this is what I was supposed to do. And I never took into consideration that anybody gave a shit, so I fucking stay at your house for 2 months and bounce and go with another group of people. And I continued to do that until my late 20s. And in my 20s was when I started drinking a lot. And in doing that, I woke up places a lot where I didn't know how I got there, and I was sore from head to toe. And, you know, that never red flagged. I just got up and got drunk, or got up and got high. That was always my MO, because from get-go, pretty sure when I realized what that drug did to me at 14, that I could escape all the things that had happened to me as a kid, you know? I didn't feel shit. I didn't feel anything, and none of it mattered. So I did anything anybody gave me, and didn't really think about what the, you know, what the consequences would be. I mean, I did things that I'm so ashamed of, but didn't think of the consequences until, oh, you know, like a year ago. I'm like, oh, wow, I fucking did that. You know that I sold my car for a quarter ounce with all my shit in it one time? That is something I went through my whole life going, oh, I'm not that kind of addict. I don't do that. You know what I mean? Like, really? Like, you hear people do that, I'm like, oh, that's fucked up. That's some bullshit. I would never do that. Yeah, I did. With, like, thousands of dollars worth of clothes and all my shit in it. I'm like, okay, take it. I needed that dough. So, oh, yeah, I did that. So, anyway, so I got drunk and got drunk and got drunk and got drunk. I had a baby at 17. I got pregnant, and I stopped doing drugs during my pregnancy. I lived with my grandparents, and she promptly took over, which, thank God, because I don't know what his life or mine or anybody's would have been like. I am so grateful to my nanny for raising us. Like, me and my son and Curtis, my brother. He my papaw touched him in a way. I'm so fucking proud of my brother, because after the nightmare we had, my grandfather got to touch his life, and also he was just a good guy anyway, and he is come out to be a really terrific man and dad and husband, and I'm just so proud of him. So And, like, he did the same shit I did for a while, and this motherfucker never got caught. Like, literally. I do not understand it. We would do the same shit. We would get home. He, like, shave half his beard off and shit all fucked up. We'd get home to my grandparents. He's like, I have to drag him out of the car and shit. And I would get in trouble. How is that? Anyway. I'd hide him, you know, like, Curtis, stop, shut, sit, you know. Because he was the good kid, and I figured I better keep him that way, you know. So, anyways, so there's that. I have to say that, like, you know, I didn't have a progression or a bottom because literally I spent my whole life up until 2 years ago thinking that's the way that life was. I was not the girl that got the house. I was not the girl that got the car or the man or the job or any of that. And it didn't seem like I didn't, you know, I didn't think I deserved it or, you know, or whatever, worth it. It wasn't like that. It was, it just wasn't me. Like, I accepted that, and you know, like, I would look at other families and I would say, well, that would have been nice, you know? But, and it's not like I thought my family was normal or that was the way things, it just was what it was. Like, I thought I was a piece of shit. I thought I was stupid. You know, all the time I would say, you know, I want to get sober and get an apartment and, you know, get a job right around the corner, some clothing store and, you know, I even though I said it and I wanted it, I didn't actually believe it, you know. It was just what everybody else was doing, or, you know, that's what I figured you're supposed to do. And it never occurred to me that I could actually do it. So we can skip to my angel. When I was 32, I got pregnant. And unfortunately, my ex-husband and I were very, very severe junkies. At this point, I'm banging dope every single day. And we lived in hotels, and, you know, he would go to jail all the time, like, you know, annually, biannually. It was like a vacation, like an annual vacation. So, for real. So he went from, like, burn and return to graduated to checks, then graduate, you know, out of your mailbox. I seen that guy walk into Home Depot with a check that was taped together three times and come out of there with $1,500 worth of shit. And my grandfather used to say he walks through raindrops because he would get like one little charge and then he'd be out doing it again. And it's funny, but it's also sad because he was never taught that there, you know what I mean? Like if he had actually gotten in some kind of trouble for it, he might have had a different life, and I feel very sad for him because finally it was counterfeiting. And so I would just keep on, you know, oh, Matthew was the love of my life. He still is. You know, the whole time I'm thinking I'm a great mom because he has a home, he has a clothes, he has food, he goes to school, you know, and like, there are moments where I didn't do drugs, like a couple of years here, a couple of years there, but I didn't have any recovery. You know, there's a big difference in learning to live different. And then, on the other hand, you're just not doing drugs, but you're banging it out just like you were, you know. And I did not know all that. So I ended up finally divorcing him, but, you know, I always had a guy. I thought I was doing it all myself. I'm like, I take care of myself. I take care of my kid. I always had a guy. What the fuck? And I'm not sure what I was doing besides. That. Or that. That works when I was in my 20s. But anyway, that's it. Guys. And then, I want to get to real quick about the part. I got to tell you this because this is when it started. This is when my downfall started. I had a boyfriend. He was like 20 years younger than me, and Matthew was about 10, 12, somewhere in between 10 and 12. And I started, he left, and I started banging dope, like, really seriously. And to the point where if somebody had asked me when I walked through my neighborhood what I was doing, I'd say, I'm shooting up way too much dope. And so then is when you... Pretty much, if you're telling your neighbors that, you might want to go somewhere, like, get some help. So, and I knew it. Like, I was like, oh, I should probably not say that. So, but I didn't snap out of it in time. And honestly, there was no way. I didn't know how to snap out of it. So the CPS got involved, and they took him. And, it had been just me and him, basically, minus the in and out of people. And, of course, when you're an addict, this poor child was like my everything, and I say poor child because, like, that didn't need to be that way. He was a beautiful addition to my life. He shouldn't have been it's like a succubus. This is my baby. He's keeping me happy, and I have to have him to be happy. I lost him. And so when I lost him, my excuse in my head was, fuck this. I'm going to get high. I'm going to get wasted. And so I did that for a minute, but then CPS sent me to Austin Recovery. And that was 6 years ago. And, I loved everything that I learned. I didn't once want to leave. I loved being there, and I felt good about it, except there was one thing I was not willing to give up. And, I went there for CPS. I was sent there. I was actually ready to go, but I was not ready to give up my will completely because I thought, and I remember this is the one thing that kept me from giving my will up, and that was, what if God's will was that I'm not to be with my son? And so I lasted about 7 months after that. I did not go to IOP. I did not go to aftercare. I did not get a sponsor. I just went to meetings and lived in a sober house. Woohoo! And that doesn't work, believe it or not. So, 7 months down the road, got some weird news, didn't go and call anybody, didn't go to a meeting. I isolated with it, and three bottles of wine later, I had a pipe in my mouth. Next thing you know, I'm shooting up heroin and meth again. And so now, remember, I'm in the middle of a CPS case, and somebody said to me, well, you should become an escort because you can get money to get a lawyer. And I'm like, okay, that sounds like a great idea. So that's what I did, and wow, that lasted a long time. Like, seriously. Here's what happened. I went 3 months later to a mediation, and they were like, I had gone to the thing. It was a bag of pee taped to my crotch, and the temperature was off. So they're like, this is my last one before that. And they were like, this temperature is off. I'm like, I'm fucking late somewhere. I ran. Because they wanted my hair, and I was like, no, I'm late to go to the game room. And it busted all over me, by the way. I was riding my bike, which is covered in pee. And at the mediation, they were like, hey, we're stripping your rights. And I'm like, what? No. And they're like, no, if we send you to rehab in the state of Texas and you get out and get high again, we strip your rights automatically. Now, I did not know that, but I cannot honestly, and I'm sorry, but I cannot honestly say that that would have changed anything because, you know, you love the people that you love. I mean, you love your kids. You love it. But that dope, and what it, the apathy, it overtakes you. And you have to be that numb to face the things that are you're causing for your own life. That's the only way I can put it. Like for me, the things I was causing at this point, I needed to be numb from it. Plus the things that had happened to me. So now at this point, you know, I'm double teaming it. Like I have to be numb from everything. And and he didn't think I loved him. And but the little shit, he was so good. He said, you know what he said? I heard him. They let me hear the recording. He said, I need my mommy. I need my mommy on paper or in person. So if it has to be on paper, then so be it. I'm not letting anybody adopt me. It was the greatest shit ever. And it broke me. I was completely like, and so the CASA guy told me to fight, make a bigger stack than my little stack. That's what I did. It took me a year. I went and asked for him back, and motherfucker, they gave him back to me. No, but I was still high and still a hooker in a hotel. I was like, what? Well, okay. I mean, like, yes. Like, seriously, but what was I going to do? Say no? So, I don't know. And here comes these people, okay? I've never met an angel in true life that I knew was an angel until I met these people. Luann and Thomas. And, don't worry, I am going to get to the part where I got sober and came here again, but hold on. Shut up. I have to say this because, like, without these people, you know, these people, Austin Recovery and my higher power and my effort, everybody says I have to add that in there to work these steps, are the only reason I'm standing here and the only reason my child is sitting right there and the only reason my family is right behind them. I mean, the only reason. Nobody spoke to me, as you can imagine. They did not come near me. I'm pretty sure my brother used me as an example of what not to do for his kids, you know? I was a good example for that. Anyway, so I'm in a hotel. I'm trying to work. And this is the first time I've ever admitted this in front of my child. You know, I was escorting, and I had to do it while he was at work and juggle this because I had to be high to do that. I mean, while he was at school. Yeah, I've had him working. No, I'm kidding. No, he would go to school, and I'd have to get up really quick, get high, really quick do some calls, and really quick, unhigh. I don't know. What? It was awful. So, and honestly, that's when it began to hit me that I wanted to be so badly somebody that he could be proud of, right? And so I call up this lady. Our kids were friends, right? And I call her up one day, and I'm like, Now, wait, 2 days before this, I'm like talking to God for some reason. I don't know. We weren't that close at that time. But he answered. He answered my call and must have been bored that day. And so I'm like, should I just call this woman and fucking tell her the truth? No. And I asked some friends, you know, like my high buddies, and they're like, no, don't do that. But something kept telling me and eating at me, no, call the bitch and tell her the truth. So 2 days of, you know, going over that, I did. I asked her to breakfast. And she's like, well, okay. So we go to Amaya's, and I'm sitting there, and I look at her, and I say, I'm going to tell you something, and I don't mean any disrespect, but I'm going to tell you the truth. I am a hooker in a hotel, and I'm stuck in it. And I'm in the hotels, and I'm stuck in that. I can't get out of the prostituting, and I can't get out. I'm sorry, honey. I can't get out of that, and I can't get out of being in a hotel. And I can't get out of either one without the other one, without the other one and the drugs. And I'm in addiction. And she looked, she's a really great business lady. I mean, superb, stern business lady. And she looks at our breakfast, and she looks up at me, and she goes, "Well, how much money can you make in a month?" That's her. Right there. Yeah. I'm like, no, you're not hearing me. I want out of it. I may have started to cry. And she's like, oh, hell no. No, 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 no. She says, this is what you do right now. So until I can figure out, we can figure out how to help you, you're going to do that, and you're going to do it to the best of your ability, because that's what you do right now. She gave me money to put my ad up and paid my room for 2 days, and I thought, oh, this is fucked up. You know, that was all for nothing. So I hung in there with her. She hung in there with me. We're going to skip around a little bit because, you know, I got to talk about how I got where I am today. But she helped me, but I was not ready yet. She ended up having to take my son to her home, never once called CPS, never once backed away from me. She backed up, but she never backed away. She never gave up on me. Her faith in me was, I don't even know where it came from or why, but when there were clarity, she invited me into her home, and there wasn't clarity, she met me somewhere else. It was crazy. When I got out of here and I made a mistake, I moved in with somebody who was, you know, the sober house is a great place to be, y'all. You won't know it right away, and you might not even know it till you get out of there. But, you know, I was at a sober house for 5 months, and I was in a hurry to leave, and I made a mistake. I hurried out, and I moved in with someone who relapsed. So, she came in, she looked at what I was doing, I guess talked to with her awesome husband, and God, they're the most down-to-earth lovely people I've ever known in my entire life. Besides Ashley, don't look at me like that. Now, they're magical people. They spent, I hope she doesn't mind me telling you this, but the first year, they helped me get an apartment in a very nice neighborhood. I don't even know how that happened. It was all God, because, like, the price, the place, it was just, I couldn't believe that I was standing in my own apartment. And they paid for 11 months, paid my rent, while I got to know myself. That's the one thing I want to say to y'all, is that, you know, it's hard to it's easy, really, to end the drugs. You just not do them, catch a nap in a sandwich, or maybe fucking detox. I don't fucking know. It is the, it's the, hey, you meth heads know what I'm talking about. Nap in a sandwich, you're ready to go. But it's the fucking lifestyle. It's the hustle. It's the not getting up every day and thinking you got to do something, go somewhere, be around people. So she gave me time to get be with myself, and it was hard. I was so lonely, but loneliness for me is dangerous, you know. And but I made it through that, and then I fucking got a job. I don't even know how that happened. Right around the corner from my house. Now, does this sound familiar at all? Now I'm in my own apartment where nobody can tell me to leave. My child has come back to me, who was begging me right before I got in here to let somebody else adopt him. He said, our mother and son bond is broke. I do not blame him at all. He said, you'll never have me again. I don't want to be with you. But here he is. We live together. Oh, my God, he's a big old slob. But anyway, but he's messing up the house where I live, too. And that's a miracle. Sorry, baby. That's what moms are for. But got a job at a clothing store around the corner. That's crazy shit. Like, all these things I didn't think I could do. I came here, and what I liked about here and how I got here was this. I gave up my will completely. At the trap house, I'm standing there, and I'm like, I don't want to get high. but I'm doing it anyway, and I can't not do it. But I don't want to. So I was like the last person you want to get high with, seriously, because I'd get high and I'd be like, I'm going to go to rehab, and I'm going to get my kid back. I'm going to get an apartment with a job at a clothing store around the corner. And this happened for a couple of years, so like nobody wanted to get high with me. So, but you know what? Fuck the haters, because look at me now. I mean, they started to wonder, I mean, when your tweaker buddies and your dope dealer are like, man, you probably ought to go to rehab. Can I help you in any way to get to rehab? I can drive you, you know? I'm not even joking. That's the shit that happened, y'all. What are you laughing about? So, anywho, so I'm standing there at the trap house, and I look up, and I can't remember anything about what I, from what, remember, I had come here before, years before, and it was like, what is that shit? What is that shit they say? What the fuck? And I'm like, Will, that's what I didn't do. I didn't get my will completely. Well, I don't have him now. I have nothing to lose. And I want to say, I wrote it till the wheels fell off and then enjoyed the pretty sparks for like 20 years, right? No wheels. And what I want to say is that, like, a lot of us come here and we are exhausted. There's no other, like, you're done. But you don't have to be as tired as us. You don't, you know? And I feel fortunate, although I don't like my path here, I feel fortunate that I was able to get that tired, you know, and because I would have died, and I would not have been able to watch my kid turn 18, you know. Anyway, so I was like, what is that noise? I'm very easily distracted. Anybody get that? Okay. So, yes. I ended up getting here because I remembered to give my will completely. And here's what I did. I stood in the front yard of the trap house, and they're like over by the garage, like all these people, and I'm like standing out there like, all right, motherfucker. You got 2 days. And they're all like, let's go in. She's embarrassing us in the yard. We're out here taking shit apart. She's embarrassing us. So, fuck him. All right. I was talking to God. I just was calling him motherfucker. And he does listen when you call him that. Call him dude, motherfucker. Oh, my God. Help. Help. So... so I did that, and I gave him 2 days, and that 2 days turned into 4 days, and, you know, here I am. When I was in here, I want to tell you really quickly, that shit you do every morning, that on awakening, oh, my fucking God. I hid in my closet for the first 2 weeks, and then Dennis hates me. He would come looking for me, and I could hear him, where the fuck is this bitch? I was in my closet. But then I slept on the floor the next 2 weeks while they did it. And, but you know what? To this day, my first sponsor was Taylor, and she told me, she goes, I was terrified when I got out of here. And she said, I want you to read that every morning out loud to yourself. Bitches, I do that still 2 years later. I know what that shit's for. It's like direction for your day. 'Cause we need simple shit. You know what I mean? And, I also want to tell you that the reason you do everything, like you're walking through and you're like, why the fuck are we doing the same shit every day? Well, there's a reason for that. I learned in here that it takes 14 to 28 days to retrain a neural pattern, right? This is what I learned in here. And we can't get rid of them, but we can retrain them. So basically what they're doing, the information is good. It's really good information. But what they're doing every day is trying to give you a different schedule, to give your body and your mind a beginning of how not to go on that hustle every day. You know, that's the hardest part, is learning to sit still. When you get out, money and fucking dudes and chicks will take you out in a New York minute. I watched it happen at my sober house. You know, as long as you're doing, building your recovery, like everything else will fall into place. And it's hard. And you're like, why the fuck does it work? Well, I don't fucking know. But it does. You know, and why does God, or who is he, or what the fuck is happening? Why is there, what is it? I don't know. I like to tell myself that's my creator, whoever it is, alien, scientist, fucking almighty God. I don't fucking know, but whatever it is listens to me, and I see it every day. And I'm about to come work for here in August. Like, what the fuck? I'm doing this. Like, these are... He would put his name behind mine. You know what I mean? That's some crazy shit. Like, it's a wonderful life if you just hang in there, because it's hard to see past today. You know, I wonder what the fuck I was doing here. I had nothing. But here I am, and I have found people in recovery, my family back there. Scream, people! They love me, and I love them, and for no reason except to love. And it's amazing. And that's all I got. Thank you.